Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
An Erio's original.
With anti-Asian hate crimes at record numbers, this season of The Margaret Cho, we're examining the historical crimes that laid the groundwork for this recent onslaught of violence. I talk with Asian comedians, authors, podcasters, as well as the organizations and people working to stop Asian hate.
Hi, this is Margaret Cho. Welcome to The Margaret Cho, Mortal Minorities. Hello. I'm very excited to restart our podcast, and we are going in a very important direction where we're going to talk about all of the recent attacks on Asian Americans, of course, but also in a historical context, how hate crimes and crimes against Asian Americans and by Asian Americans have formed us as a community. Today, our historic subject is the Chinese Massacre of 1871. That was the worst mass lynching in our nation's history. We're also talking about the recent Atlanta shootings. Our guest is Helen Hong. Helen is a comedian and an actor, and she is the host of the trivia podcast, Go Fact Yourself. And she is my friend. So today's guest, Helen Hong, I'm so happy to have you here. And how are you feeling? How are you feeling?
Oh, Margaret, it's so draining. It has been such a draining time because, you know, amongst us Asian Americans, like we've all been saying, like, yeah, it's a double pandemic for us. It's the pandemic of the coronavirus, and it's also the epidemic of racism against us. So it's like we're dealing with what the rest of the country is dealing with, and the world, we're dealing with what everyone else in the world is dealing with, and also racism.
But it's like the racism part of it is like, people should know that this did not come from Asian Americans. Like, they're not that dumb, are they? I mean, if they
Margaret, they are.
I mean, I'm like, I don't think they could I don't think they could really, really think that. I think they're just looking for excuses to lash
out. That's true. I think there's a lot of latent racism that this has blown open. And so there was already some latent racism, like, ugh, them Chinese or whatever, you know? And then, you know, you put a bit of added pressure. And it's true. Like, everybody's going through it. Like, everybody has lost income. Unless you're a billionaire, you've had lost income this year. And maybe you've been displaced. Your housing situation is shaky. Maybe you're due on back rent. You know, we're all going through that kind of stuff. You know, the kids are at home all day, homeschooling, like the stress is piling up. And so you just add a little bit of that squeeze, that little bit of added pressure, and that brings out a lot of the latent racism, and people need, you know, somebody to blame and somebody to lash out to. And it's not who I think it should be lashing out to, which is our government, which should be taking care of us and is not.
Right. I mean, it would be the government. It would be anti-maskers. If you have to lash out at somebody, it would probably do you the best good to lash out in an anti-masker. Not that I'm condoning violence in any way, but if you have to lash out, do it with an anti-masker. So you're doing two things. You're taking them off the street.
You're
keeping them from infecting
people. It's a win-win. It's a win-win.
It's a win-win. You're not attacking innocent Asian Americans, especially elderly. I cried when I saw your dad's video recounting his experience, because he is such a charming man, and I really see so much of my family in him. Mm. Your dad handled himself very well in that situation. He didn't want to escalate it.
Yeah.
And it was really like those things of like, you know, sometimes this kind of stuff is really beneath contempt, where you almost, it doesn't even justify a response, but it turned violent. Can you talk about what happened?
Yeah, so this was very recent. You know, people are surprised to hear how recent it was. This is February 4th. He knows the exact date because he has the receipt. He still has the receipt from the purchases that he made that day at the store. My dad was at a supermarket in Boston where they live, and he was returning a cart in the parking lot to the cart corral, and an employee of the store, like an actual employee, like in a uniform,
yeah,
who was in the parking lot collecting, you know, rounding up the carts, started yelling obscenities at him for no reason, like prompted by nothing, started screaming obscenities at my dad. My dad says he didn't quite grasp everything that was said because of the language barrier, but I'm sure there were some racist things that were yelled at him. And then the guy shoved a cart full force at my dad from about 7 or 8 feet. And my dad says, had the cart actually hit him, it would have like dislocated his knee or like broken his hip or something. And as it happened, the cart grazed over his left big toe. And when he got home, the toe was black and blue. And he was injured. Like, he was injured in a racist physical assault.
Yeah.
And, you know, my dad didn't escalate it. He ignored the guy. He didn't say anything. My dad then went into the store. And the reason why he was at the store in the first place is he was making a return to the supermarket. And so he went directly to the service desk. And the guy followed him into the store, saw him going to the service desk, assumed that he was making a complaint about the situation, and continued screaming at him.
Oh,
like,
my God.
Followed him to the service desk and was like yelling more shit at him, to the point where the lady behind the service desk asked my dad, like, hey, what's that about? Like, what's going on? And my dad was like, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. And that, to me, enraged me, because I was like, Dad, you had the perfect opportunity to complain, to make a state, you know, to make a report about this guy. And I spoke to my dad afterwards, you know, I was like, Dad, why didn't you say something or you report him or do something? And my dad, in all his real empathy and kindness for humanity, was like, well, I didn't want the guy to lose his job. Like, it's the middle of a pandemic.
Yeah.
And I just was like, oh,
it's
God.
So sad. I mean, but it's like, it's that kind of kindness is really what these people do not deserve. I mean, what a terrible thing. In things like that, I mean, this is probably why our parents are old, is because they can take such horrible things and really kind of deal with them internally, so it doesn't leave like a lasting, raging sort of like emotional scar.
That is a really good point. Yeah, my dad just kind of let it roll off his back. And that is, it's definitely a skill that I don't have. I also think there's a generational component here, Margaret, which you probably can speak to as well. Whereas like that generation, who they're older, they're first generation immigrants. So they were the first ones to come over as adults. And so they have there's two things going on. So there's a cultural portion, which is the in a lot of East Asian cultures, you're just supposed to suck it up, right? Like, you're just supposed to, like, things happen, shit happens, and you just keep your head down and just keep plowing forward. Don't make waves. Don't cause a lot of problems. That's a very, like, East Asian cultural trait. And then additionally, because they're first-generation immigrants, they feel like, well, this isn't even my country. you know, they still feel that way. My parents definitely feel that way. Like, I'm not really American. This isn't really my country. I came here fleeing whatever I was fleeing from my country. And this country took me in. And so I'm just going to work hard and do my thing. And I'm just thankful that they took me in at all. And there's that sort of attitude. Whereas you and I, you know, and our generation, we were born and raised here. And we're like, fuck that. Like, we're American. Like, I don't have to apologize. I'm sick of apologizing. I'm done with that. I'm not an other. I'm not un-American. We were born and raised here. We went to the same fucking schools. We speak the same language. We have the same, like, cultural heritage, you know, the same cultural background of growing up. And, like, I'm not going to take up, you know, I'm not going to put up with this shit. And if No. somebody's going to, like, pile shit on me, guess what? You're getting it right the fuck back.
That's right. And it's really hard, though, because it's like that our parents, like, you know, they have experienced so many unimaginable things that they won't even talk about.
Yeah.
That I sort of know about, but I don't really, because they really kind of shield themselves from me hearing about it, because I would be so angry.
Right.
Because I'm very, like, protective of them, and I get really, really upset. But, you know, they experience so much difficulty that, you know, in a sense, like, my family's like, well, this is nothing. This happens every few years where people get really angry. And it's true. You know, you see the cyclical anti-Asian American, anti-Asian sentiment happen in times of, you know, whether it's war, whether it's financial
yeah.
insecurity,
yeah.
whether it's sort of like the turning of industries, whatever it is, we're generally made to be an outcast. And so I think our families have seen lots of this.
Yeah,
over time.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. And I'm hoping, you know, I was talking to a journalist, an Asian American journalist recently about this. And he was saying, I think we've finally gotten to the point where even that generation is like, okay, enough.
Yes.
Like, there's only so much I can take. And mm-hmm. if you're going to beat up on 80-year-old people, completely innocent, random strangers on the street, like, we're not going to put up with that. So thankfully,
yes.
I think the paradigm is shifting even for that generation, where they're like, okay, we don't deserve to get, you know, first of all, we don't deserve to get murdered in spas. You know, we don't deserve to get gunned down in our places of work, first and foremost. But also, we don't deserve to get randomly attacked on the street while we're just out living our lives having done nothing.
So this will bring us to our modern subject today, which is the Atlanta shootings. And this is something that it really upset me. I spent about 7 years living in Atlanta, and I know exactly all of these areas that these shootings took place. I know the freeway where he was apprehended. So this happened on March 16th. A series of mass shootings occurred at three spas in the metropolitan area of Atlanta, Georgia. 8 people were killed, 6 of whom were Asian women, and 1 other person was wounded. And the suspect, 21-year-old Robert Aaron Long, was taken into custody. I guess that his parents saw him on the surveillance footage, and they said he's got a tracker on his phone and called it in, which I think is, it's the least you could do. He was on his way to Florida to commit more murders.
Yeah, exactly.
So when did you hear about this? I actually heard about it. I was looking at Instagram, and I saw it on Jenny Yang's feed. And I was like, what is she talking? She was so angry, and I didn't know what she was talking about. And I had to look it up. And I was so shocked.
Yeah. Yeah. There's just so much going on. And I feel like, in one sense, this was the logical end result of the year of racism that we have put up with.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, it's going to lead up to, you know, there's only so much kind of, you know, racist dog whistling that officials can do, of calling it the China virus, calling it Kung Flu, calling it the Wuhan virus, and the virus is from China, and China is, you know, China is responsible for all our the shit that's happening in our lives right now. There's only so much of that that you can say before somebody snaps and goes, well, I'm going to kill some motherfuckers over this.
And killed, they did. They killed Young A.U., Sun Cha Kim, 69, Hyunjun Grant, 51, Suncheong Park, 74, Dayu Feng, 44, Sao Chi Tan, 49, Paul Andre Michaels, 54, and Delana Yan, who was also just in the spa with her husband. Now, the justification kind of came through the police, who was talking about it, saying he had a real bad day. Which I was like,
it's like hold laughable.
Up.
It's laughable in the it's like to laugh to keep from crying.
There was a real effort to humanize the murderer.
I feel like there always is. I feel like when it's white cops arresting white mass murderers, and we've seen this time and time again, mm-hmm. there is a humanization, like, oh, we have to find the motive, we're talking to him, and we're calming him down, and the fact that this one sheriff was like, he was having a bad day, it was like, go fuck yourself all the way off, go fuck all the way the fuck off, because, like, you know what, when the rest of us have bad days, we buy a pint of Ben and Jerry's and an entire family-sized bag of Ruffles, and we put on a fucking Netflix marathon, and that's how we deal with a bad day. Or maybe we have three cocktails or whatever it is that we get through a bad day. Nobody has a bad day, quote unquote, and then goes and buys a gun. By the way, that day he bought
that
those
day
guns, because that is how easy it is to buy guns in
it's
the state
so
of Georgia.
Easy. It's
so
like, easy.
He's like, I'm having a bad day. I'm gonna go buy some assault rifles and I'm gonna go shoot up some bitches at these spas. And also, the other thing that you know, the law enforcement in Georgia is claiming is that this is not racist.
It's a racist. It's a hate crime. It's a hate crime. It's like, why is that in question? If you go kill a group of people who are all the same race, it's a hate crime. I don't know why you could, you know, you don't take the murderer's word for whether That's it's right. a hate crime or not. You take the murderer's.
That's exactly right. And, you know, and I was tweeting about this, where I said, I can't believe that you want us to accept the line that, like, no, I'm not racist. My dick might be racist, but I'm not racist.
It's but that like, was that, and his justification that he had a sex addiction and that he didn't like the way that Asian women made him feel, as if that's enough of a justification to kill women. And, you know, it was said that he was deeply religious and that having this sex addiction was somehow an affront to his religion. What about murder?
Even the argument, if you were even to take on face value, okay, this guy had a sex addiction. Okay, well then, between him and the spa, there were probably 15 strip clubs. You know, there were probably like nightclubs where people, you know, go to hook up. Like, there are so many other places that you could hit, mm-hmm. you know, that could be the object of someone who has a sex addiction. But he didn't go to those places. He didn't go to a
Asian
spas.
He went to
Asian, exactly. Specifically Asian spas. And that's where he hit. And that is absolutely a racist hate crime. I'm sorry.
It is so terrifying and so sad. You know, just I saw the sons of Hyunjun, the one of the women. She had the two sons.
Yeah.
In Atlanta, and they're just so lovely, and she loved K-pop and dramas, and
yeah.
talked to them and all the time.
And she was a single mom, and she was working hard to support her kids. And it's so brutal.
But we will have a link to their GoFundMe. As far as I know, that they had raised when I checked last time, they had raised over $2 million. For the sons, and I think that's really nice. People have been really generous, which is really remarkable.
And I will say that is something that I think if we were to try to find a silver lining is I feel like non-Asian people are finally awakening to how serious of a situation this is for our community.
Yes.
And I'm so just touched and grateful for the outreach that I've had personally from, you know, people who are not Asian American, friends and, you know, people that I know, acquaintances that are not Asian American, reach out to me being like, hey, I'm so sorry this is happening to you, and let me know how I can help. And and I've been working with this organization called Asian Americans Advancing Justice. They're a really great organization. They're a long time like advocacy. They do a lot of
They're incredible. I talked about them in another episode. We did the Vincent Chin case.
Yeah.
And they were founded from an organization that was around that time. So they're very important. Yes.
And they have been working with an organization called Hollaback to do online workshops to teach bystanders. They're doing bystander intervention training.
Oh, that's great.
Because so many people have reached out to me and to them to be like, how do I help? Like, if I'm a bystander, like, how can I help the situation if I witness something? And and I'm so glad that people are actually, like, taking action, because that's what we need. You know, we need people in the field because, you know, to be honest, Margaret, you know, and I know, like, Asian Americans, we only make up, like, 6% of the population in the United States. So if it's just up to us, like, we can't be everywhere. We can't. You know, as much as we want to be out there, like, you know, vigilante groups, like, patrolling the streets, there's literally just not enough of us. I live in Los Angeles. My parents live in Boston. I'm terrified. Like, I've been thinking all these things. Like, do I send my mom mace? Do I send my mom a taser? Does she even know how to fucking use a taser? My mom weighs 100 pounds, literally dripping wet. My mom is a size double zero. I joke about this in my act. A size double zero, Margaret. That's when zero is too big for your ass. So you gotta go down to double zero. That's how small this bitch is. And so, like, she can't, there's no way that she can defend herself against anybody.
Yeah.
And so it can't be up to them. It has to be a community coming together to protect our people.
It's got to be us talking about it. But we're going to take a really quick break here. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the Chinese massacre of 1871, which happened really close to my house, actually, here. So we will be right back with Helen.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello? Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Now, did you know about this particular event? It was in 1871. It was in Chinatown in Los Angeles. And
if I remember correctly, isn't it actually the biggest mass lynching in the history of the United States?
Yes. They call it the Night of Horrors. The sources that I took from mainly were from a book called The Chinatown War, which is the Chinese Los Angeles and the Massacre of 1871. Now, most of the people coming from China to the United States at that time, they were coming for the gold rush, actually. And so a lot of them settled in San Francisco. And when they were not able to make money at finding gold, or they were blocked out of certain areas, they quickly figured out how to make money, because some of the miners were actually sending their clothes by mail to Hawaii, which at that point was called the Sandwich Islands. And they wouldn't get them back for months. To get cleaned. To get their clothes washed.
Those
filthy prospectors were like finding gold, but, you know, also getting very dirty, dirty, dirty drawers.
Squiggly lines coming off of my body.
You know, they were really, really, they were not clean. So they were sending their clothes in the mail to not even Hawaii yet. It was the Sandwich Islands. Anyway, they had been settling mostly in San Francisco. There was quite a big Chinatown there. They were sort of all around the West Coast. And there was a small Chinese community building up in Los Angeles, where Chinatown is now. It's actually where it is. It's closer to Olivera Street is where the first kind of community was. And there was really some efforts in the very beginning where Chinese merchants would spend a good amount of money to get some good storefronts and sell goods, but they just couldn't build a following where they could get non-Chinese people to buy, whether it was tea or silk or any of their products. Like, it was just, there was so much racism and so much distrust of what is the other that they couldn't get it working. They couldn't get that sort of cross-cultural thing happening.
Totally.
After the initial push towards kind of legitimate business, there was more of a push towards, you know, kind of getting what they could, whether that was gambling houses. Asians do love to gamble. I think it's it's something that really kind of the Westerners or the people that were not Asians couldn't figure out, because they were like, they don't drink. They're actually just gambling.
It's our vice.
It's their vice. It's our vice. So there was quite a lot of different kinds of factions, and they had guys who were young men who were particularly like very good at fighting, very good at shooting, and they were called highbinders, and they were Chinese, and they were sort of hired by these different kind of factions. They weren't exactly developed crime families. It wasn't so much like that. It was more just they were kind of like these smaller communities that one would side with the other. Some of those like long-held rivalries from different villages in China would be brought over here to some extent. But they would also find ways to use the American courts in order to have grievances against each other or settle grievances against each other. There is this like prevailing notion that Asians don't seek legal help, or they didn't. They were passive somehow. But actually, the early Chinese were very active in getting legal representation, going to court, making sure people got arrested. Because in China, at the time, laws were so geared towards upper class that you were always dealt with unfairly. So most of the people that came over here were lower class and lower income people. And so they were like, well, this is a place where the law's not going to be just against us. We should just try. And so they were quite often in the courts doing lots of different things, which I think is really interesting.
That is interesting.
There was also a doctor, a Chinese doctor, who saw a lot of non-Chinese patients because medicine was so terrible. Western medicine was so bad.
Even then, in the
1800s, and everybody was dying. So they were just like going to this Chinese doctor. Lots of non-Asians, particularly women, were going to Chinese doctors in Chinatown, which I think is really amazing. I'm like, wow, there was a couple of Chinese doctors.
Even then, they were like, oh, we got to go to Chinese. The Western medicine is really
fucking
us up.
We got to go to Chinatown. Do something. Do something about this whatever disease. Legionnaire. I don't know what disease was going around. Legionnaire's disease, 1800s. Something. Trench mouth. Something. There was a lot of different things happening. So what led to the events of the night in question in October of 1871. It was October 24th of 1871. And there had been quite a lot of fighting of highbinders between two sort of warring families over a woman, a young woman who a young highbinder had decidedly taken from her old husband. She had an older husband who was Chinese, reasonably wealthy. And she was supposedly the young, very beautiful Chinese woman. And a young hottie, some young Chinese Ryan Gosling.
No, a Stephen Yeun,
Stephen Yeun,
or a like, John Cho.
And then she probably would have been married to, I guess James Wong is too old. Let's cast it. It would be like a anyway, some young hottie came and decided he was gonna. He took her quickly, and they got married real fast. Of course, nobody asks her what this is, you know, what she's right. preferring. So the argument happened over this one woman in particular. There's a lot of differing stories about her, who she was, but they sort of, in this book, it sort of, they believe that she was actually just a wife and not one of the sex workers. There were quite a few sex workers, mostly because there was such a disparity of men and women. You know, you oftentimes, if you came over here, you didn't get to bring your wife over. Some guy would get married and then leave his wife with his family and send money home. If you had a wife here and you were fairly wealthy, the story was that you would keep your wife under wraps and she would never leave the house. And so she would never interact with anybody. So the proper Chinese woman at the times would never leave
like a good
the
time.
I know, would never leave the home, which is so sad. But the sex workers were out on the street with big feet. They had not been bound. And it would be
flaunting their ass feet.
Big old size eights coming down. Well, there's some 39s coming our way. Some wides.
I mean, they could have even been 6.5s, to be honest, Margaret. And that still would have been like, whoa, that's a lot of
foot. Flopping those big feet down the street. And there is this belief that this woman that they were arguing about, that this highbinder took away and married, was actually not a sex worker of the time. She was actually just somebody who was married to somebody else that he decided to steal. Anyway, this set off a huge war between these warring kind of like factions in Chinatown, and they were fighting with each other. In one of the shootouts, a beloved inn owner, a bar owner named Robert Thompson, was shot. And he died a little bit later on in the night, but even before he had died, the rumor that the Chinamen are killing white people spread all through Los Angeles to the real delight of these vigilante groups that had been very frustrated at the lack of policing. There was not a lot of police. Anyway, there was an element of Los Angeles that was really like angry and sort of wanted to look to blame the Chinese. And so,
Margaret, this is so like history repeating itself. Like,
it is so history repeats.
The sentence that you just said is like angry white people looking to blame,
and it's got out of hand. They ran down to Chinatown, hundreds of people going down there, and it's like, you know, that uncontained rage of somebody's got to be blamed, even though they're not even the people to be blamed. That's why I think they've got to know it's not them. But it's just like the rage has to find a target, no matter who it is. The mob ran down to where is Oliveira Street. They grabbed a man named Ah Wing, who is totally unrelated to any of this. And they dragged him out. And they had this huge crowd there. And so this was, I guess, right by the Athanasius Episcopal Church. They dragged Ah Wing out, and they didn't think to bring a chair or a box to actually, you know, when you're actually being hung, you're on a gallows, so you'll fall through, and the impact of the fall will actually break your neck. So it's a rather quick death. But they hoisted Ah Wing off of the ground. The rope broke. So then they tried to attach a stronger one to him, but his body wouldn't hang properly. And so one of his killers actually climbed up the gate and jumped on his shoulders, shattering both of his collarbones.
Oh, my God.
A man that was outside the store who was not part of the mob heard a man named J.G. Scott, who was part of the mob, say they had already hanged one Chinaman, and the man who was not part of it said, "That's not right." And Scott yelled back, "You're a damn Chinaman." It was like this thing of like this unnamed anger that was just trying to find victims. And at this point, Jim Thompson hadn't even died yet. Robert Thompson. Jim Thompson's an author. Robert Thompson, they sort of think that the fact of his death really had little to do with what went down. I think that they would have slaughtered Chinese people even if he had survived. This had nothing to do with any of it. Just wanted to kill.
Just the excuse or the last straw, right, for a lot of these people. And it's just blatant racism. And the other thing that really upsets me about a lot of the stuff that's happening today with the anti-Asian attacks is that a lot of the perpetrators are actually not white. They're other people of color. And I have never disclosed this before, but the guy that attacked my dad was black. And a lot of these attacks across the country are being conducted by black and Latino people against Asians. And I read this quote, and I actually posted this quote on my Twitter recently, this thing that Lyndon Johnson said, that if you can convince the lowest white man that he's better than the best colored man, black people feel like they're being abused by the white man. So like they're looking for someone that they can abuse. Or Latinos feel like they're being looked down on by white men. So they're trying to find someone to look down on. And it's us, you know, and which is not to say that it's all obviously like there are so many allies of every race who have strongly come out against these and spoken up and just been, you know, there have been so many black and Latino allies who have really come to our defense. But sadly, I feel like there hasn't been a lot of spoken about the punching down element of it.
Yeah, it's like that thing of that misdirected rage where you're taking white supremacy out of the picture entirely and not realizing this is why this exists, is because of white racism.
Not only white racism, but economic injustice, which is part of white supremacy, right? Economic injustice you know, and again, like why I say we're not blaming the right people. The right people to blame are the people in power who are allowing the Bezoses of the world, like Jeff Bezos. How is it possible that a billionaire like doubled his income during the pandemic? How is it possible that Zoom saw 600% profit and they didn't pay a dime in taxes last year?
In taxes.
And
I know.
It's like,
so
let's
crazy.
Be pissed off at them. They're the ones that we need to be pissed off of, you know? And yet, if you're a small-minded person of any race, if you're a small-minded person, you're like, you don't see that. You just say, well, it's these fucking chinks. It's China.
Well, it's also that idea of the model minority in that it makes it seem like other minorities are not the model to be. And it's that kind of pitting us against each other where in unity we truly have power.
Yeah.
And that's what I think is really the most important part of this time is to encourage unity, which is really it's deeply painful that these attacks against Asians are coming, especially in the Bay Area too, in a lot of instances from people who are not white. I mean, it's like a very, it's really sad, and where we need to change, we have to do it.
The model minority thing has hurt us, has hurt all of us, every person of color, so badly. It is such an insidious concept that is an extension of white supremacy. And I know a lot of people of every, you know, every race feel that like, well, Asians are doing so well. Asians have so much money. I've heard that in green rooms at comedy clubs from white colleagues who are like, well, you're Asian, like you're rich. You guys are rich. And I'm like, okay, tell that to every fucking nail salon worker that you've ever encountered.
I don't understand.
You think they would be working in a Chinese food restaurant? Every Chinese food restaurant worker, every nail salon worker, every laundry worker, you think they're fucking millionaires and that's why they're doing those jobs? Get the fuck out of here.
It's like that erasure from the working class that for some reason we are not part of, but we are. I mean, that's my family. I mean, we're not all Crazy Rich Asians, which I love Crazy Rich Asians, and I love Bling Empire, but that's an aspirational
it's a minority
story that I'm
it's a minority
I'm not a part of. Yeah,
yeah, it's a very
it's definitely a minority.
Minority of our community, just like, you know, just like rich people are the minority of every community. So
yes.
The vast majority of Asian Americans are working people, you know.
Yes.
That's why you see them at every Asian restaurant and
yes.
every laundromat and every convenience store clerk. Like, those people are not doing those jobs because, you know, for shits and giggles. Give me a break. They're doing
right.
those jobs out of sheer economic necessity.
It was really that economic frustration that really caused this group to lash out at the Chinese community. In the end, I think about $40,000 of that time's money was stolen from the victims of lynching. I think in total, it seemed that about the numbers vary, but it's this in this book, it says that 15 Chinese people had died by hanging and three more had been shot to death. So, like, yeah, 18 people.
It's actually, if it's not the actual biggest mass lynching in our history, it's one of the biggest mass lynchings in United States history that very few people know about and very few people talk about. You know, lynching is considered, you know, a crime that was perpetrated against African Americans, but it's like, no, we've
yes.
been lynched too. And we're continuing to be, in the sense that this mass shooting in Atlanta is absolutely, absolutely 100% a racist hate crime perpetrated against a group of people for their
yes.
race. If this guy in Atlanta is saying Asian women made me feel some kind of way, and that's why I targeted them, I don't know how more black and white it can be that
it is such a racist hate crime. And it's so real. And I mean, it's like, to be able to go back in history and look at this, it's really pretty incredible. A lot of the people in the Chinatown, a lot of the Chinese people actually ended up leaving L.A. Most of those, I'm reading now from the book, most of who stayed in town remained concealed in private houses. About 60 sought sanctuary in a guy's residence on Main Street. So that's quite amazing. Some made it to homes at part of the city. Actually, one of the judge who was very active in overseeing a lot of the cases, the Chinese immigrants, and he would really help them a lot in legal affairs. William H. Gray, who was the justice of the peace in Los Angeles, he hid several Chinese men and women in his cellar. And for years afterward, he would receive anonymous mm-hmm. gifts of Chinese silk, porcelain and tea in appreciation, which I think is really, it's really incredible. After the riot was over, bodies of 14 Chinese were still suspended in darkness from the Western Gate. So the 14 victims were there, stark, staring corpses, ghastly in the moonlight. And the first lynching victim, Ah Wing, he had been cut down shortly after he was hanged. For a long time afterwards in Los Angeles, they would call it Black Tuesday. I would love to see a movie of this, you know, because it's something that, you know, we should be doing. We should be making these movies and talking about these stories, because
produce it, Margaret. Produce it.
Yeah, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
You and I could be the ladies walking with our big feet.
Our
down
big
the street.
Ass, my big ass 5.5s clomping down.
My giant, my 7.25 wide. Well, Helen, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for this grim walk down memory lane.
Where can people find you and your podcasts and everything?
Please, please, please check out my father and I's YouTube channel. It is called Old Korean Dad Stories and Sometimes Mom. Old Korean Dad Stories on YouTube. And then on my Twitter and Instagram are at Funny Helen Hong. Funny Helen Hong, because some other bitch named Helen Hong has all my handles. So I'm the funny one.
You are. You're the best.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Margaret. You're a hero of mine, and I'm so glad that you're speaking out about this stuff and like talking about, you know, the history of our, you know, racist past.
There's so much.
Because it is true. It's like we're like on a hamster wheel of racism. Like
It's so true.
The same shit that was happening in the 1800s is happening now. Like, it's bonkers.
It is so bonkers. So I'm glad we're doing this, and I'm so glad to have you on. Thank you. This week, we are highlighting the Atlanta area spa shooting fundraisers that are helping to support the victims' families as well as the survivors. We will link to the GoFundMe page in our show notes. If you want to support our show, subscribe, rate, review on Apple Podcasts, and spread the word. Reach out to me on Twitter with your thoughts, at Margaret Cho, or at Instagram, at Margaret_Cho. The Margaret Cho is produced by the Irios Network.
Irios.
Powered by Acast.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.